So it's Wednesday. We have Dame Shirley in the studio. We have...
Hiya.
Also, we have Tim Morris.
Hello.
And we've just been joined by royalty. You sound like royalty anyway. And
that's kind of you.
And someone that's far more intelligent than all of us three put together. We've got... it is Spencer, isn't it?
Yes.
And Spencer...
Right.
What's your last name, Spencer?
Brown.
Spencer Brown. Okay. And you are... Brandon's former school teacher.
Yes, that's right. Oh. I taught Brandon Langdon.
It's yeah. your fault.
Yeah,
And you are... What's your correct title then?
At Brading Roman Villa, I'm the education officer. So my main job is to organise the visits of the school pupils who come, but I also deal with adult education, and obviously I get to do things like this as well.
Mm. And you sound so enthusiastic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had a great deal of pleasure working there, and because we all enjoy working there, it's easy to share that with the visitors. And many of the people who come realise that, you know, we are a small independent charity, so we have to work hard. We actually care about everybody who comes because we need their support.
Do you know what? I went... Because I'm not really big on history, but I'm beginning to be.
Yeah.
Since meeting my wife, who's quite an intelligent person, and she talks about, far more intelligent than I am, she talks about history and she talks about Stone Age and things, and she goes into great detail, and she's quite amazed that I don't know a lot of stuff. And I was quite amazed recently. We went away late last year up to Norfolk. And I think it was somewhere, a place called Suffolk Punch. Does that ring any bells?
Not with me, no.
Okay, well, it was an area where they went back in time, and it was really fascinating. And you walked into this place, and you sat down, and they showed you a little film. And when it finished, everyone else got out and walked out. And my wife said, come on, we're off to the next bit now. And I said, can I stop and watch that again? Because it was so interesting. And it's all this stuff that's around you. I get goosebumps when I walk up round by Carisbrook Castle, because you think, you stand there and you think, all this stuff that's gone on before you, and it's all there, right on our doorstep. And we don't find out about it enough. We really don't. So when I think I've said this to you before, I've done an outside broadcast from Brading Roman Villa, and I was absolutely fascinated by it.
Oh,
And like so many islanders, too lazy to find out about the history that we're steeped in, that's right here on our doorstep. I mean, there's things that we're going to learn about today, Dame Shirley. I know when you see an old map of the Isle of Wight, wasn't Brading underwater for many years?
Yeah, I mean, the amazing thing about Brading is that at the time of the Romans, where the main road goes along from Brading to Sandown, that's where the sea was. Mm. And it continued to be there until about 1880. In 1880, the Victorians built a railway line from Brading to Bembridge, and the embankment that was built so the railway line could get to Bembridge caused the whole of the area to silt up. It had been silting up a little bit, but the embankment really speeded up that process. We've got some photographs taken from Brading down just before that, and Victorian children playing, and in the background you can see the whole of Brading Harbour flooded. So in 1770, photographs of, you know, the harbour as it would have been more or less at Roman times.
I mean, I'm still trying to get my head around what Brading was underwater. I mean, did you know that, Shirley?
No, I didn't. No.
There you go. And this is right on our doorstep.
Yeah,
and this is why
I know.
We should get out a bit more often and have a really good look at what's out there.
Yeah.
So Brading Roman Villa, open for business.
Oh, yeah. And the other, I mean, Brading Roman Villa, it's a great name for it, and that's what it is. But there is, in fact, a lot more to Brading Roman Villa than the Romans. If you go by car, the Iron Age village is below the car park. Brading was, in fact, an Iron Age village for at least 11,000 years. But in the Iron Age, because they built their houses out of wood, these rotted and disappeared. So when they did the archaeology below the car park, all they found was a couple of posts and a ditch, the sort of thing that you might dig for your own fences. Now, this doesn't make much of a tourist attraction, so they covered it up again. But there was 11,000 years or more of the Iron Age, and the Romans chose to live on the same site because it continued to be a great place to live. So there's a lot more to Brading Roman Villa than the Romans. It was a Roman villa for 300 years and an Iron Age village for at least 11,000.
Good grief. I mean, honestly, all this stuff that we're is right on our doorstep, and we never, you know, there aren't enough people that probably know enough about the history of the island and so on. And I find myself walking around Carisbrook Castle and think, yeah, they're in the right place. When they built that castle, you can see everything from up there, can't you? Would that be the same of the Roman villa? Because that's in a similar sort of, you know, up on the hill, isn't it?
Yeah, we think that people had chosen to live there because it was an ideal place to live. If you think about food, clothing and shelter as being the human needs, you know, you could get fish to eat. There were sheep on the downs to provide clothing. And there was land around for farming. It really was an ideal place, plenty of fresh water. There were springs, you know, that people would need for the fresh water. I mean, it's absolutely ideal as a settlement, and that's why it continued to be used. It continued to be used. People lived there really until the 8th and 9th centuries. And in the 8th and 9th centuries, the Vikings arrived and they attacked whatever they could see from the sea. And at that point in time, we think Brading was abandoned. And therefore it moved from where it is now, half a mile the other way, so it's hidden by Bembridge Hill, so it couldn't be seen.
Oh, right, OK. Well, I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, honestly, I think this is going to be the most interesting radio that we've done. Well, we did have a good show yesterday, but, you know, for a while, because it's a real eye-opener. Can I ask a stupid question? I just picture Carisbrook Castle, Brading Roman Villa, and thinking, those people that lived there, they would have been there at roughly the same time. Did they get on?
Well, there were, in fact, 7 Roman villas on the Isle of Wight. There was a Roman villa in Carisbrook. There might have been some Roman fortifications on the top of the hill. What happened with Carisbrook Castle was that when the Normans built it, just after the Norman conquest, in about 1068, when they were first building it, they obviously destroyed much of the evidence which would have been Roman. And that's partly because one of the ways that you show that you're in control is that you destroy the centre of power of the people you've just beaten. And so the Normans built on top of Carisbrook Castle in order to make sure that they were showing they were in control. But they clearly would, at Roman times, it would have been a bit different.
So they wouldn't have got on then. They would have been fighting against each other.
Well, we're not certain in Roman times about the amount of fighting on the Isle of Wight. We think the people on the island adopted the Roman way of life, and that was because although we found lots and lots of Roman artifacts on the island, we haven't found any weapons. No weapons, no fighting. Mm. And that's because we think that, you know, you could either live in a wooden hut or you could have a Roman villa with central heating. You could live in the dark, or you could have glass on the windows. You could run around in animal skins going, ugh, or you could have some wine. And so the local people thought, what shall we choose? Oh, yes, I think we'll copy the Romans.
So, I mean, so did we descend from, if we lived here on the island all our lives, I mean, is there a good chance we descended from Romans?
Now, that, of course, is one of the big mysteries and one of the strange things about Brading Roman Villa. As I said earlier, it has been a settlement for at least 11,000 years. And so in that time, there will have been simply thousands and thousands of people living there. But unfortunately, all we have found are bones which relate to 8 different bodies. So, without the bodies, we can't really be sure of who exactly the people were. We do have one body which was found at the bottom of the well, along with a hunting dog, and we would like to do some archaeological DNA to find out exactly what you were interested in. Where did that body come from? Was it from the Isle of Wight? Was it from France? Was it from Germany?
So, you talk bodies. I mean, let's say, I know this is morbid now, but whenever you, you know, walk around a place like this, you think, right, okay, there must be loads and loads of bodies. Where exactly are they? Are they just under the ground? Because you think hundreds and thousands of people have lived on the Isle of Wight, and there's not that many cemeteries. So where are they? If we go to Brading, right, there must be hundreds of bodies. Is there a grave?
There are no bodies. We think that the people were either buried or cremated, but the land must be of a type which means that the bones dissolve and disappear. We really have found only enough that we can be sure of 8 separate people, not whole skeletons. The biggest skeleton that we've got is a bit of the head, some of the teeth, and a couple of the legs. Yes, and that's it. Nothing else has survived. That's the most complete human body that we've found. The rest of the bones, we think, have dissolved because of the acidity in the soil.
That was my next question. It doesn't mean to say that there weren't any. It's just that they've dissolved. Is that what happens then?
Well, they do get preserved in some places and not in others. It just depends on the local conditions.
So do you think the bodies are put in coffins now and then buried? What would happen to them? Do they stay or hold?
She's a bit worried because she's quite close to it.
Well, no, I just wondered, you know.
Well, underground, of course, it depends on the amount of dampness. It also depends on the temperature, yes?
Yeah.
Because, of course, you know, if you, for example, think you're burying your loved one, but you're burying them in Sweden, well, you're putting them in a freezer, aren't you? Because, of course, it's frozen for most of the year. Yeah. So in Sweden, the bodies would survive a lot longer, many, many more years. Here, I'm afraid I don't know enough about how long it takes.
Two things. First of all,
Tim, you have to talk to that
microphone. I am so impressed with your knowledge. You've not had to look at a bit of paper or anything. It's really, really good. Just one quick question. We're obviously listening to Vectis Radio. The name Vectis, is that actually a Roman word for the Isle of Wight?
Yes, it is. Oh. It is. Yeah. That is, of course, one of the things that I should have mentioned. It was the Romans who called it Vectis, and that, we think, comes from a slight change for the tribes of people who lived here. But one of the things the Romans brought with them was writing, and so they brought history with them. There was no history. It was all prehistory before the Romans, and it was the Romans who ended up calling it Vectis. And that is how that word reappears so much all over the island today.
It does, doesn't it? There's a lot of companies that have copied us and called themselves Vectis. I feel as though we should be sat on the floor cross-legged. I do.
Well, the bit about it, what I'm trying to do always, and what also the friends of Braiding Roman Villa who do the introductions to the villa, what they're trying to do is make it accessible and explain how the parts fit together, how the things worked. So, you know, we mentioned that there were no weapons found, so from that we conclude that there were no fighting. And that was because perhaps the local people adopted the Roman way of life. And in many ways, of course, those of you who are old enough will remember the life of Brian. You know, what have the Romans ever done for us? And of course, the Romans were smart enough to realise that winning the battle was really easy. Ruling the country afterwards was what was difficult. And what you needed to do was to get the local people on side. And so they improved daily life. They made life better. And so people did like the Romans.
So back then, there wouldn't have been, because obviously there would have been the water, and there wouldn't have been no White Link or Red Funnel.
No.
So how did they, you know, I suppose they used their own boats, but they I suppose they pitched up a braiding, did they?
Yeah. Well, the boats, the Romans did have very large boats, but the sort of boats that they would have used for travelling to the Isle of Wight and around to Germany would have been about the size of a modern coach. If you could think of a modern coach, how wide it is, and then with a point on each end, that would have been about the right size. And the reason for that was that if you are trying to stop places to go trading, then you want to stop in as many places as possible. Large boats need a real harbour, and you might not have a real harbour. So a smaller boat would allow you to stop in more places, and that's what they would have done.
So why braiding then? You say there were seven others.
Yeah.
Dotted around the island.
Aye.
I'm guessing, you know, why not braiding?
But right. Well, that again, yes. Now then, you see, the reason we think, one of the possible reasons why they stopped at braiding was that after you've been on your ship for a few weeks, you know, you're going to be short of water. And one of the things that's near braiding are a series of cliffs and rocks. And those were the clue that Roman sailors were looking for. So wherever they saw them, France, Spain, Italy, they knew that those rocks produce water that's safe to drink. And after you've been on your ship for a few weeks, what do you want? Fresh water.
Do you know, I make so much sense. You ain't even reading a script here. This is all in your head.
Yeah. Oh, aye.
Crikey.
I mean, if you want to know how it works, most of you will know anyway, because every time you go to the supermarket and you look at the mineral water bottles, you know, it says, oh, this water has been filtered for 7 million years. And you think, oh, yeah, yeah. OK. Right? Obviously, we bottle the water, and Roman sailors were looking for exactly the same rock structures, because when you're trading, there's no guide, you know, there's no sort of rough guide. You've just got to look for the clues and know that that type of land produced water that's safe to drink.
Wow. And you mentioned seven others. So there is, you said there was one in Carisbrook.
Yes, there's one at Newport, Roman Villa. That's
Avondale Road, is that right?
Yeah. And that's the one that has what we haven't at Brading, which is a complete bathhouse. So if you want to go and have a look, that's really brilliant. There is also one at in Cumley, and that is now part of Robin Hill Country Park.
Is that the one that they were recently digging up at Robin Hill?
Yes.
And then they stopped, didn't they? They had to stop doing it for some reason.
Well, what they did was they found as much information as they could, and then they covered it back up to preserve the remains.
Right. Yes. So they're just going to leave it like that, are they now?
Yes.
Yeah.
What they did was they discovered all they could and then covered it back up to protect it.
Why are they covering it back up then?
Because it wouldn't make a tourist attraction very much, because there isn't that much to see. There are the base, there's the plan of the walls showing the shape of the building, and that's about it.
Right. Okay.
At Brading, because the mosaics were there, it was, you know, a reasonable thing to keep them and preserve them, as opposed to just cover them up, because there is something to see. Whereas the others are just marked out in stone. So you can see the shape of the building, but you can't see the original Roman remains.
Do you agree with covering it back up and preserving it, or do you think people should be able to see it?
Well, covering it back up is much the safest thing to do. In recent times, we had hoped at Brading to find the name of the people who lived there. And as a consequence of that, the boards, as you go around, saying, this is my villa, this is what I did in this room. And that's because when the boards were first made, we thought we were going to find the name. But what happened was that the Victorians couldn't do chemical analysis. And so much of the information which we would get today was destroyed because the Victorians never thought about preserving the soil. So, for example, we know that there was a fire at Brading, but we're not certain of when. We know that people lived there, but we're not certain of how many. That information would have been possible for us if we'd found the villa today, because of the techniques available to us today. So covering up things like they've done at Cumley might mean that in the future technology is developed which would allow us to find information which we can't yet.
Okay. Am I right in thinking the Carisbrook one was done away with by the people that made the built the castle? Is that because they were stamping their authority?
No, there was a fortification on the top,
right.
So there was another one as well at Carisbrook, and then there was one at a rock at the far end of the island, and there is one at Gurnard which has fallen into the sea.
Oh, right, so that one's never ever going to be retrieved then?
I think there are aspects of it that are visible, but I don't know enough about that. My main knowledge, really, having worked at Brading, is about Brading Roman Villa.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a moment. Okay. I've got loads of questions. I'm intrigued. Good. I'm on a roll now. Where's Rock then?
Rock is at the far end, and it's on the ridge, and it's probably near somewhere near Chesil Pottery. I'm afraid I don't know. I should do.
It's just a place called Rock, is it? And that's where.
Yes.
And is there one there?
Yes, there is one there. And the man who did the archaeology at Brading Roman Villa, Sir Barry Cunliffe, he's one of the foremost archaeologists in the country, he was really excited about the possibility of excavating rock. More than that, I don't know.
If you could go back to any period of time that we've kind of mentioned in the last little bit, where would you go? How far would you go back? Or would you stick with where you are now?
Well, on the whole, I'd stick with where I am now, if I am now, going back into the past. Going back into the past, it's all fine if you're rich. But unfortunately, 9 out of 10 were poor and died very young. So if you go back into the past and you're rich, any time is fine.
You don't fancy it then. I don't fancy it, because I know I'll end up being poor. What would you be? Would you be a Victorian or a Roman? If you could choose?
Oh, I don't know.
Which way of life would you go for?
I think I'd like to live like the ancient Greeks. Yes, a simple life, you know. After all, many of you have experienced it or looked at it when you've been on holiday in Greece. You know, those seaside villages, you know, fishing and living.
Sounds
quite a
great.
Simple life.
I went to Corfu recently, so I know we come. What about you? You've been to Greece?
No, not Greece.
No, never been to Greece? No. You never been to Greece?
No, I've never been to Greece at all.
Okay, you haven't lived. Yeah, you haven't lived. So we've met that. There's Newport, Robin Hill, Carisbrook, Rock, Gurnard, Brading, obviously, and there was one more.
I can't remember. And I haven't got it on a piece of paper, so I can't look at it.
Where did you say Rock was again? By Chesil Beach?
Rock Pottery. They're all on the Stone Ridge, and it's at the far end somewhere. It'll be on one of the walking tracks, I'm afraid.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Are you ready to take a phone call?
I can do, yes. Yeah.
What you need to do is put your headphones on. All right. Okay, so we're going to... Hi, who's this?
Hi, it's Chip.
Hi, Chip. You all right?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
You're out there because there's not enough room in the studio for you.
Yeah, I know.
Now, I know you're a frequent visitor of Brading Roman Villa.
Yeah.
You going to tell us about
really
it?
It's really lovely, though. I've been to Brading Roman Villa, and it's amazing. And there's nice artwork there. I like all the artwork. I've been to isn't it the villa near Newport?
Yeah.
It's near Newport. And I went there with my school on a trip.
That's the one that's up Avondale Road, is it?
Avondale
Road?
Yeah, Newport.
When's it open, do you know?
I don't know when it's open, do you?
It's at a certain time, it's written outside.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's very interesting in there.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
There's loads of tiles on the floor.
Yeah, go and have a bath.
You can go and have a bath in that one.
Yeah, but I reckon the Romans should... put hot tubs. So I installed a hot tub in the villa.
They might have done, you never know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Romans did like bathing, but it didn't really catch on in Britain because, of course, you know, bathing came from Italy, where it's really quite hot. And there were places, public baths, for example, in Dorchester, which were built by the Romans, but in fact were never really used and were knocked down about 30 years after they were built, even while the Romans were there, because bathing just simply didn't take on in Britain. Mm. It's just too cold.
Now let's talk about one of your favourite subjects: eating.
Did you
eat in the cafeteria restaurant?
They serve loads of cakes and stuff like that.
Well, we get the lowdown on what else they do in Omo. But when was the last time you went there?
It was ages ago.
Okay, yeah. So if he's not been for ages, let's just say 2-3 years. What's changed in the last 2-3 years? Anything?
Well, we're currently rewriting the story. The professionals call it reinterpreting the museum. What it really means is that we're telling the story in a way that is easier to understand and takes account of the recent excavations that have taken place.
So things have changed.
Yeah.
So you might like to get down there and have another visit.
I'll go down there and have another visit with my dad because my dad likes history.
Okay.
Of history.
Brilliant. Well, when you go, give me a shout, because I'd like to go down there as well, actually.
You could come down with us.
That would be great. We'll do that. And then we're going to have some cakes and stuff
afterwards. We'll all go down, shall we? Vectis Radio.
Yeah.
We'll all go down.
It'd be like Vectis visiting Vectis,
wouldn't
it? Yes. Yeah. Vectis. All right. Thanks for your call, Chip.
Okay.
Thank you, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
See you soon.
I've got loads of questions that I want to ask you. But I know you've got loads of events that you want to promote as well. I've got one question before you go into the events.
Yeah.
If you come to any of one of these events or you visit, do you get like a guide? Do you get like a guided tour?
Well, if you pay to go into the museum, there will be a volunteer guide. And volunteers volunteer because they love it, and so they really do like answering your questions. But also it means that they can pitch what they tell you to meet your needs. And as you go around, you know, they'll come around and say, have you got any questions? And so as you've gone around, you're like, oh, what was this or what was that? And so in that way, it's about making it accessible. It's about getting people to enjoy it. You know, there's lots to it.
Okay, is there any one thing that anything that you look at from all those hundreds of thousands of years ago where you think we're not too dissimilar or something, you know, somebody's tried to design something and you think, well, we got one of those now, like the bathhouse.
I mean, were you to go back in time, there is so many things in Roman times and at Brading Roman Villa that you'd recognise. You know, glass in the windows that keeps, you know, the warmth in, the cold out, and lets the light in. You know, they had central heating. One of the other things that we've got, when you go there, you'll see that there's a brown square. Now, in fact, you look at the middle and you think, oh, I know what that shape is. It's a keyhole. And the main villa had a key, had a lock on it for a key on the outside. Now then, that tells us a really big picture because, of course, you know, when do you lock your house? When do you lock your house?
Every day. Yeah. When I go through the door, it gets locked.
Right. And when you leave it, basically. But yeah. If you think about it, places like Buckingham Palace don't have a lock on the outside because the Queen just says, oh, pop out for a pint of milk. Yes. Right? You know, there's always somebody on the inside. So if it's got a lock on the outside, that would suggest that it was used for some of the year and not the rest. So the servants weren't left inside, because if the servants were inside, they could protect it by putting the bolt over.
Right.
So if it's got a lock on the outside, that suggests that it's used and then left. Mm. Now, that tells us that probably Brading Roman Villa is the first holiday home on the Isle of Wight.
Oh. Wow.
Because...
I'm sorry. Yeah. There you go.
Can I ask you a quick question? Aye. It's rather a personal one. I went to Morocco about 12 years ago.
Yes.
And I booked there a Roman bath.
Yeah.
I was told I had to give 24 hours notice because they had to prepare the room.
Yes.
Now, I thought, rather strangely, that it would be Vestal Virgins and nice serene water and grapes. And,
yes.
But it was torture.
Oh.
They actually lit four corners of the room.
Yes.
Underneath.
Yes.
The floor, and in the middle.
Yes.
And had tiles.
Yes.
And then made me lie on these hot tiles.
Yes.
And they basically poured buckets of cold water and then hot water over me and pulled me in places I didn't want to be pulled.
Yes.
Is that about right? Or?
Well, that's certainly a modern interpretation. However, you are correct. The floors were very hot. When you, in the foyer at the villa, we've got a selection of shoes, one of which is a set of... they look like wooden clogs. And they wore those in the bathhouse because the floor was so hot. If you wore leather-soled shoes, the heat would strike through the leather. So they wear these sort of wooden shoes to stop their feet burning, basically. So the heat on the floor is definitely correct.
Okay.
All right. Hello, so you get a guide...
Yeah. Oh,
and we're back to that now. We're
yeah.
all right. That's all right. That's fine. So you get a guide. What other events have you got?
We have a number of events over the summer. Coming up, opening in the secure exhibition space at the back of the museum on the 1st of April is opening up an exhibition of pirates, hopefully timed to coincide with the Pirates of the Caribbean. It's an exhibition of costumes from the films and a bit of the history about the development of pirates. Yeah, and so you'll be able to look at weapons and having a look at how the tactics that pirates used. Of course, it'll be explaining that pirates are not the same as wreckers and they're not the same as smugglers, but they do often get confused. Yeah. The other events that we've got is that in July and August, we've got a pop-up exhibition about the Great Fire of London, and that's obviously looking at how London changed because of the fire. And then from August to December, we've got... in the secure exhibition space, an exhibition of Japanese ghosts and demons. Now, these are priceless prints coming from the Ashmolean Museum and are showing life in Japan at the end of the 19th century, just when it was opening up to the world. Japan had cut itself off from contact with the outside world for 200 years, and during that time it developed many of the qualities which we see as typically Japanese. And so the prints that we'll be showing from the Ashmolean Museum show that Japanese essence.
Do you know what? You're a fascinating guy. Is there any else out there that's more intelligent than you when it comes down to Brading Roman Villa?
Oh, yeah. All you have to do is speak to the others. I mean, I mainly deal with 8-year-olds. And what I'm trying to do...
That's why we're enjoying it.
Yes, this is the equivalent.
Absolutely. And that's what we're trying to do. Always at Brading Roman Villa, the key is to get people engaged and to get them involved. You know, explaining how things fit together and why they changed. So, you know, for example, you know, being able to explain why it's there. It's there because probably they were attracted by the water. Because, you know, when you've been on your ship for a few months, what do you want? Fresh water.
Sure.
Yeah.
What sort of stuff would they have eaten back then?
Well, they ate everything. They had, because you see, they could get, the north of the island in Roman times was entirely covered in trees, so it was full of deer, so they could have them. On the downs, there would be sheep. Now, the sheep, in fact, were the key to the success of the villa because they didn't have fertilisers in those days. But what they did was in the summer, when the crops were growing, yeah, the sheep were on the downs. Mm-hmm. When the crops were harvested, mm-hmm. the sheep were then dispersed onto the field and the sheep poo provided the fertiliser. Yeah. So next year, the crops grew again very successfully. And one of the reasons why braiding was so successful was clearly through farming. Although it's called a villa, it was basically Braiding Roman Farm. And it produced three times more than it needed, and it sold the surplus. And when you go there, you'll see that the people who lived there were pretty rich. They had underfloor heating, some of the best mosaics in Roman Britain. Yes, we found tweezers. Clearly these people were not living, you know, on a knife edge.
How can they have undersoil heating? How does that work then in those days? Because they wouldn't have had electric back then, would they, or gas?
No, it was simple science. I mean, what they did was that they raised the floor on pillars of tiles, larger tiles over the top to join the surface, and then there were what looked like shoe boxes going up the walls, which were box flues. And so by natural convection, yes, the fire would have been outside the building. And the reason why the fire was outside the building was for safety. They realised that the fire was a really useful thing, but it was dangerous. And if it got out of control, if it was outside the building, slightly safer. So it would be slightly lower, there would be a hole in the wall, and by natural hot air rising, the hot air would go from the fire under the floor, up through the walls, so you had a hot floor like your burnt feet, and then up through the walls.
Wow, they're ingenious even back then.
Yeah, it is. I mean, one of the things that always amazes me about the Romans is that, you know, when they came to thinking about heating, you know, they thought, oh yes, let's go for the really complicated underfloor heating. They didn't come up with a much, much simpler idea of a fireplace. Yes? Yeah. You know, it's really strange that they did develop the very complicated underfloor heating rather than having a chimney.
Yeah, now that makes sense, doesn't it? But do you know what? You're selling it to me. I'd rather go back and live in those times because it sounds like all right. I'm just a bit worried about the smoke. Where would the smoke go?
Oh, the smoke went out through the roof.
Right, okay, so it wouldn't come in through those little vents that you were talking about.
No, the vents went from below the floor, up through the walls, and out through the roof.
Right, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. I fancy going back to that, because those times must have been, I would imagine they're quite stressful, but not as stressful as today.
Well, yes, I mean, I don't think it was quite as stressful as today, but, you know, mostly, the other bit is we can tell that it probably wasn't quite as stressful, and that was because the evidence that we have was that people lived until they were about 70 years old, and therefore they must have been quite healthy.
Yeah, sure.
Because they weren't able to cure people. Yeah, so if they're living until they're about 70, then I think that's...
Well, when you think the average age nowadays is around, the average is around 70... And you think 70 back then, crikey, that would have been magical, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, no, and one. Well, I mean, if you think about what it says in the Bible it says you should expect to live 70 years and 10. 3 times 20 plus 10, which is 70. And that's where we get that idea from.
Hang on, somebody explained that to me recently and I couldn't add it up. It's 3 school years. Or
yeah,
score.
3 score and 10. Now, a score is 20. It's an old measurement. You know, like some people today wouldn't know about a dozen being 12.
Right, so is this, the score was... I always thought that a score was Cockney rhyme and slang.
It could be. It can be reused and reborn in different times with different meanings.
Yeah, that's true. So, 3 score and 10, 70. See, my mum would say, you're poaching now, Shirley, because what, you're 72? And we're like only whippersnappers, because Spencer's only about 51, same age as me, so, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, look, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about Braiding Roman Villa and the things that have got going on down there. Could you sell us something from the menu as well?
Definitely.
I bet you eat down there as well, don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, okay, we'll talk more on that in a moment when we come back for part two. Stick with us.
This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Have you looked at your carpets lately? Are they fit to be seen, or do they let you down? Or maybe they could really do with a freshening up to get rid of some of those stains and smells. Whatever the problems with your carpets, curtains or upholstery, you need ChemDry first. No matter what the material, be it leather, cotton or silk, ChemDry first have the tools, training and experience to ensure they look their best. All cleaning products are safe and non-toxic. Call 295 518 or go to chemdryfirst.co.uk to book a free quotation and claim your free can of spot remover. We offer a no-quibble money-back guarantee on every job, so you have nothing to lose. That number again is 295 518.
With some news on their exciting developments on their Dodna Industrial Estate depot, here's Andy Gustar from Hamilton's Fine Foods.
We have about 7 or 8 parking spaces available. We have all the fruit and veg, all the fresh cakes and bread we were selling before, plus the full range of Hamilton's fresh meats. So that's really available now at Dodna as well. So not only Power Street in Newport, Dodna to park as well. And we do a click and collect service online, a full up and running website now online, and a delivery service as well.
www.hamiltonsbutchers.com or hamiltonsfinefoods.com. Find us there and also find us on Facebook, or our main phone number is 526098.
This is a recruiting announcement for C Company, Hampshire and Islewide Army Cadet Force, who are recruiting in your area now. We are looking for 12 to 18 year olds or in year 8, so please come along and see them. They parade evenings from 7 till 9 at locations situated across the Isle of Wight. For more information, call company headquarters on 01983 522 427. I repeat, 01983 522 427, or you can visit armycadets.com. Do it now.
I met a murderer on a train. I was sickened and horrified by what he told me. He asked me to run away with him. Of course, I declined, but hiding between the pages of my novel, The Killing of Mummy's Boy, I gave it a try. Set on the Isle of Wight, this 5-star, taut, terrifying and brilliant psychological thriller is shortlisted for the Winston Fletcher Fiction Prize. If you like reading, buy it now on Amazon. Or if you prefer to listen, hear it on Amazon Audible. The Killing of Mummy's Boy by Joan Ellis. Not for the faint-hearted.
Livewire Electric Shop, for all your domestic appliance needs. Appliance sales, repairs, spare parts and TVs. There are 5- and 7-year warranties available on selected brands. Find us in Orchard Street, Newport, or call us on 01983 522 420. Livewire, your one-stop appliance shop.
Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, saving lives across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Flying 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Our helicopter is called out many times a day, and we can reach anywhere within the Isle of Wight, including the helipad at St Mary's Hospital, within 20 minutes. Funded solely by donations, we rely upon the generosity of the public to keep us flying and saving lives. To see how you can help, please check out www.hiow-airambulance.org.uk.
Celebrate life's good, bad and banana skin moments with me, author Joan Ellis, in my new show Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls. Join me every Friday between 1 and 2 when I'll be chatting to a host of guests, including writers, poets and celebrity islanders, Jan Toms, Barbara Mackie, Donna Jones MBE, Gail Middleton, King Stammers and Dom Curran. We'd love to hear from you too, so why not ring in and join in the conversation every Friday between 1 and 2.
Stay social and get in touch. Add us on Skype. It's Vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
It's a Wednesday. We have Dame Shirley in the building. We also have Tim in the building. And we also have royalty. We have Spencer Brown, Lord Spencer. And we are talking braiding Roman Villa, anything to do with. And is there any, what's the question you get asked most?
The question we get asked most is the one that you have already asked, which is about Vectis and the origins of it.
Ah, all right. Okay. Yeah. So, food. Let's talk food, because it's lunchtime. Yeah. You know, you turn up, you can spend... How long do you reckon you can spend there?
Well, you can certainly spend a whole day there. There are... You know, you can go to the villa inside, and there's things to see outside. One of the great advantages of the villa is that you can go in and out as you choose. It's not like a trip to some of the other places where it's a long conveyor belt. You can stop halfway round, think, oh, I fancy a cup of tea, and then go out and come back in.
Yeah. Okay, so if you're there for a length of time, you're going to get hungry, yeah. So you need feeding.
Oh, yeah. And one of the great things about Brading Roman Villa is that we have a trained chef, Ben, and so the things that you eat are made on site. We don't just buy them all in ready-made, and so there might be a little delay while things are made, but it is all done. Obviously, that means that we can do things specially to order. So last week we had a family with an autistic boy, and his mother said he only eats margarine sandwiches with two of the crusts cut off, but not all of them. Can you do that? Yeah, of course we can do that. So we just put some margarine on some white bread, cut two crusts off, left two crusts on, and this little boy was very happy.
Wow. Okay. I fancy some bread now with margarine and the crust cut off.
Yeah. Wait,
am I right? Is there a fruit that the Romans brought over to us that...
Well, there are just outside, there is a formal garden, and that's maintained by the Friends of Brading Roman Villa, and it contains a medlar tree, which is a little-known fruit, but it is one that was introduced by the Romans, and there's also a fig tree.
That's it, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And the Romans believed that disease was natural, so they'd try and grow plants in the gardens to help them get better. Of which the figs and the medlars would have been used.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, that was quite a good question, actually, Shirley. Did you bring the fruit over yourself?
Well,
because it would have been roughly the same.
I just dug it out the back of my memory.
Yeah. Because
you
were there.
Did I bring it over myself?
You were there all those years ago. Tim?
Just a quick question. The Romans were known for their entertainment.
Yes.
Are there any signs of entertainment on the island? Because obviously, wherever there's Romans, usually... A Colosseum or two.
Yeah, well, Colosseums were designed to entertain the masses in the cities. Life in the cities was always a bit grotty, a bit hard work, and you know, not so nice. So the way to keep the people happier was to entertain them with things like the entertainment, the gladiator fights that would go on in the Colosseums. Now, last year, we did do a reenactment weekend, and we're hoping to do the same this weekend. I haven't got any details of that. But, you know, the entertainment would have been gladiators if you were in a city. In a villa like the one at Brading, it would have been drinking and wine, music and dancing girls.
Sounds like fun. And you're saying you're reenacting that this weekend?
No, not this weekend.
Ah, when?
I'm not quite sure when yet.
Right, OK. You'll tell us when you do, though.
Oh, promise, yes. Hopefully in July.
Because I've got Tim's little eyes, they yeah. lit up then when you mentioned drink and get dancing girls.
Yes. Well, I mean, one of the things that we did find was a large drinking vessel. Now then, it's about the size of... It's just a bit bigger than a 1 litre jug, yes? But it had a very narrow base. And the idea was that the narrow base meant that if you couldn't put it back upright, you'd had too much to drink and you weren't allowed anymore, so it would fall over.
Is there anything on the menu in the cafe that it resembles what they would have eaten all those years ago?
Yes, we do have a number. We have tabula convivia, which is a selection of cold meats and things like hummus, which is a North African dish, but because the Romans had conquered North Africa, they would have known about that by that point. So there is the tabula convivia. There are other items too, but the majority of things that we often consider connected with Italy are to do with tomatoes, and in fact tomatoes come from South America, and those are obviously 1500 years later.
Tabula convivia?
Yes.
That sounds like something erotic, doesn't it?
Well, it just means...
What would it be?
It means friendly table.
A friendly
tabula
table.
Table and convivia, convivial, let's
right.
be friendly.
Okay, so what cold meats would you get?
Oh, salamis and a bit of cheese and hummus and perhaps in season some figs and some tomatoes perhaps and a salad.
I'm not big on the figs, but I like everything else you've mentioned there. And do you do like banquet? You must do banquet things where you can say, right, okay, we want to eat like they did. Eat like the Romans did all those years ago.
Well, in fact, the number of people who want to eat in that way, who want to eat exactly like the Romans, is very limited. So most of the food is exactly the sort of thing that you would expect to find at a normal restaurant. So there's macaroni cheese, and then each day Ben amuses himself by doing specials, and so there's short orders of specials. There'll be a few dishes of this and a few dishes of whatever Ben comes up with, and I haven't got any details of those because those vary every day.
Okay. Do you just give him a free hand then?
Oh, well, yes. Because the best way to make food is to give people who love it the option to make it. And if you like food, you'll think, yeah, I fancy doing that. There is this in season, that's what I'm going to use.
It just sounds like a great day out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Your grandchildren would love this.
I think they've been, actually.
Have they?
Yeah, with the schools.
I bet. Because you've got a connection with the schools. I bet the schools are involved a lot.
Yes, that's right, definitely. We get quite a lot of islands, and that's partly down to the welcome that we give them, but it's also down to the fact that the impact of the Romans is a key part of the primary school curriculum.
It is. It is. If you go into the classroom when they're doing it, they're making all these things to do with Romans and everything, you know, out of cardboard, and it's fantastic.
Mm. We should be doing that. I mean, we should be a little bit more knowledgeable of what's underneath our because it's there. It's right under our noses.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So when did you get involved in all this then?
Well, I had worked at a school in Sandown for 25 years, and then I was given parole, and and I was very, very lucky to. In many ways, I was guided by fate. As I left one place, another job appeared, and I moved from one to the other. And I was very, very lucky.
Did you teach history?
Yes, I did, actually. But, of course, when people ask that, my more common response is, like Phil in the Archers, because he used to be a teacher, and when he was asked that, he used to say, no, I taught little baskets. But, in fact, I did.
Yes. Very true.
So you've been involved how many years with the villa itself?
Two and a half.
Only 2.5?
Yeah.
Obviously, it's like 250 years.
Oh, no.
So only 2.5 years?
Well, obviously, having taught history for so long, I know quite a lot already. And so what I've been able to do is to join the bits together so that, you know, I know what was happening before, I know what was happening during the time, and that's how you make the connections. Because what people adore when they go to the villa is connecting what they're learning at the villa with what they already know.
You must have learned an awful lot in a very short space of time, 2.5 years. Yeah, you would have known a little bit about it, but the way you come across here, you've been there for years.
Yeah.
Not two.
Well, it's great fun, and, you know, I mean, life, if you have to think about what energises you. And having come from where I was to where I am, then this isn't work, this is just great fun.
Well, yeah, like I said, you're so enthusiastic about what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
And that certainly comes across. So, we can go there every day except Sunday?
No, it's open Sundays too.
Oh, wow.
One of the great things, particularly at this time of year, we get a lot of visitors because a number of the more famous attractions on the Isle of Wight, their advertising makes it appear like they're open all year, but in fact they're not. Whereas Brading Roman Villa is open every day, 10 till 4, except for a short period, normally from about Christmas Eve to a couple of days before New Year. But apart from that, it is open every day. So if you're passing, it will be open unless it's Christmas Day.
Okay, on your website, just to clarify, Visitor Centre, Museum and Cafe are open daily from 10 till 5, but the last entry to the museum is at 4 o'clock.
Yes.
You must think, when people turn up at 4 o'clock, you're not going to be able to do this in an hour, you idiot.
No. We're always helping them.
No.
We're always welcome to see them. And, yes, it is open until 5. I had been referring to the hours of the cafe.
And when are you there? Do you do the guide as well?
I do some of the guiding for the adult groups, but most of the guiding on a daily basis is done by the Friends of Brading Roman Villa. And this is a separate charity whose whole existence is to support the villa. And the Friends of Brading Roman Villa act as guides, and they will give you an introduction. And as they go round, if you've got a question, you can ask them about that.
Have you ever been, Tim?
No, I've never been. I really want to go now.
Well, see, that's what it makes you feel like. It makes you really, you know, I've been there. I haven't been there for a long time, but I want to go there. I want to have a good look around. I've got the history bug for some reason. I mean, I'm a little bit simple when it comes down to history, and that bugs me a little bit because I should know a little bit more. There was something as I was mentioning. We went to Norfolk last year, and I went, and they did something. They were showing you about these people that were doing something, and you think, how come? So they did this. I didn't know this. Something that we do, they started all those years ago, and I can't remember who they were. And that really annoys me that I can't remember that. And it's like something so simple that you didn't know where it actually came from. And it was an eating thing that they were doing something how they well they cooked like, what they ate or something.
Right.
And it's there right under your nose, and you think we just take it all for granted, don't we?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that the schools teach is history around us. And so many island schools study Carisbrooke Castle. And as a consequence of that, the kids get to see how it changed, why it changed. And they can analyse buildings so that they know, you know, they can use those skills later at other sites.
So can you just clarify something? Because obviously you're a bit more intelligent than I am. And I know we're stepping away from the Brading Roman Villa bit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a bit... When I go for a walk around Carisbrooke Castle and I think, where's all the bodies? I know there's, like, on the hill, there's a big cemetery and loads of things there. But this we're going back hundreds and hundreds of years ago. They ain't there. So are they around the moat? Would they be in the moat somewhere?
Where those bodies are, I'm not sure. But Carisbrooke was... Well, it's a very, very special site. We think it was partly Roman. There's an Iron Age fort, and that's there's a burr, which is a low wall round the base of the motte. And then there's the Norman Motte and Bailey Castle. And then after that, at the time that of the Spanish Armada, Elizabeth I was anxious about the island being attacked. And at the time, the population was so low, it didn't have enough men to make an army to defend itself. So when every other castle was being left to go to rack and ruin, Elizabeth, who was a remarkable skinflint, a bit of a miser, spent a fortune rebuilding Carisbrooke Castle with the most famous castle design in the world, Federico Gianibelli, an Italian, and so it was designed to cope with gunfire.
You ought to go on Mastermind.
Wow.
Okay, look, we've ran out of time, and if you want to know more, there is a website, www.bradingromanvilla.org.uk. You're open from 10 through till 5 daily. Last visit to the museum is at 4 o'clock. Anything else you want to add quickly?
No, but the great bit about Brading Roman Villa is, in fact, there's more to Brading Roman Villa than the Romans. There are art exhibitions, there's craft, there's the fabulous cafe with the most beautiful views, and, of course, it's set in a place that's peaceful and tranquil. It's a very nice place to be.
Spencer Brown, thank you for coming in and sharing an hour with us. It's been an eye opener, hasn't it?
I could sit and listen to Spencer all day. It's fascinating.
Can we come back with you, Spencer?
Yeah, definitely.
And thank you, Tim. We'll see you next week.